Well, good morning. Today is Friday, October 19th, 2007. The show will actually go live on the 26th, so we've gone through a kind of time warp. This is Steve Whitaker from the University of Virginia.
Mark Hofer from the College of William & Mary.
And we have a special guest with us today. It's instructional technology resource teacher, Tina Coffey from Salem City Schools in Salem, Virginia. Hi, Tina. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I guess we should talk about how we kind of got on each other's radar. And Mark, this is a little dig at you. Sorry, but it's all about Twitter, man. I know we still haven't convinced you of its goodness, but...
Not yet.
Tina, I think I'm following a guy who happened to be following you.
That's a little creepy, frankly.
Well, it's Richard Sebastian. Do you know Richard?
You know what? Not personally.
Okay. Well, Richard is a student here at UVA. He's a doc student, too, and I'm on his doctoral committee. And I don't know why I had the impression that you two actually knew each other. Maybe it was a comment that he'd made or a tweet that he'd posted or something. But when I saw your handle, you know, Elementary School Instructional Technology Resource Teacher is basically what it kind of conveys, I don't know why I made the assumption that he knew you. And I did a little click and went over to your Twitter page and saw that basically you had this blog that you'd been keeping about the work that you do. And so we wanted to get in touch with you and talk to you a little bit about your job, because it's so closely tied to the things that we talk about on the show.
That's great. I'm glad to be here.
How long have you been a Twitterer by any chance?
Oh, gosh. It happened at the end of last year, the end of the school year last year, and at first it was just kind of intermittent that I would check it. But then as I found myself over the summer kind of watching it a little bit more, and then really this year, this school year, I open the twit bin over in the side of my Firefox right. and watch and see what's going on, and have gotten some great experiences from that. So
yeah, it's been kind of interesting. I use Twitbin and I use Twitterific on a Mac every once in a while too, but either way, they're just sort of off to the side, and you just kind of get the sense of what's going on during the day.
Right. Sometimes there's great links to different things that are posted, people are doing, and you can catch different events that are going on live, and it's been really fun.
I think that's the biggest utility in it. It's not necessarily finding out what other folks are doing, but having people with similar interests pointing out whether, you know, videos or conferences or events that are happening online.
That's interesting.
Where did Tina, where did your interest in educational technology come from? You know, could you give us a little bit of background? Tell us about yourself and maybe how things in your life played out to bring you to where you are now.
Okay. Well, when I started my undergraduate, I was interested in elementary school. And so I graduated, ended up teaching first grade, second grade a couple of years, mostly first grade. And as I was doing that, I've always also, at the same time, kind of over on the side, had an interest in technology. It's been something that's just clicked for me and made sense for me. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college, I worked, as one of the computer lab helpers and then in the writing lab. And at a time when email was just starting, time where the internet was just really picking up. And then so when I went into the classroom, that was the first thing that I was kind of interested in. Hey, can you get me a computer that really works well that I can that I can do stuff with? And then it just kind of progressed from there. I ended up doing a web page for the school. And so then when I went back to go get my master's, I started looking at instructional technology programs. And so my master's in curriculum and instruction, but it's concentrated in instructional technology, and I just love it. It's something that I love. So you mix the teaching part that I love and I like to do, and then you pull in the technology part, and it gets me all excited.
That's so great that you were able to go that route, Tina, to go the CNI route with this emphasis in technology, because typically what we see is, you know, kind of the technology programs are very techno-centric,
right.
You know, not focused so much on classroom applications. So that's a great kind of a blend there.
Yes, it was really nice because I got a lot of the foundation behind the technology too, not just the technology skills. As a matter of fact, I would say that most of my technical skills I've taught myself. It was more of a basis on how to use these in the classroom that I was able to receive when I did my master's.
That's great
because, I mean, I think we all would agree probably that teaching the skills is in some ways the easy part. It's really thinking about how it connects with your teaching that is more challenging, especially in ways that kind of add value and whatnot. So that's great.
Right.
It seems like, and it seems like teaching the skills is something that's just such a moving target anyways, because by the time you get out and in practice, the tools have changed enough that the teaching the skills needs to change with them.
Right. It's not so much about teaching the skills, but learning how to teach yourself, I think, in technology is the big thing.
And I think I think Mark, that's something you and I used to talk about too, and we were doing some in-services. It was sort of like not learning how to use the tool, but really learning how to learn the tools. Since the processes seemed similar most of the time, but the actual commands that you have to execute, for example, are different.
Yes, and that's a very challenging thing to convey to people if they don't quite understand that yet. Because a lot of times what I find in my job is that people really want a step-by-step direction on how to do something in one program, and it's really hard to kind of make that shift.
Well, especially is that, you know, you need that one program later in the day to do something. And as much as it would be nice to focus on the higher level critical thinking skills, it really is, where do I click to make this thing go?
Right. It's all about time.
Right. Really. Sure. It is. And I think that's that one theme that we always come back to as instructional technologists, which is there's the ideal and then there's what happens in reality. What is your job like day to day, Tina? I mean, if you can give us sort of a standard day for you.
Well, you know, it changes as the school year progresses. In the beginning of the school year, I spend a lot of time setting up things for teachers. We use a lot of programs that rely on databases and kids' names being imported into that and passwords for them and stuff like that. So I spend a great deal of the beginning of the year getting things ready. Also, at that point in the year, the technicians also need our support a lot to things are moved out of classrooms, unhooked, things like that. So the beginning of my year is more behind the scenes kind of thing. And then our school system feels like that keyboarding is an important part of the elementary school curriculum, at least for our fourth graders. So I do spend about 3 weeks at each school for a couple hours a day doing keyboarding in the beginning of the year. But then as the school year progresses, then I get into more project-based activities with the teachers. So, and then towards the end of the year, there's the, you know, closing down things too. So it really just depends upon the point in the year. Right now I'm kind of in the point where I've almost finished up all the technical stuff and I'm almost finished with the keyboarding and I'm starting to do some work with the teachers, but a lot of times that is, it's not so much projects yet because we're introducing the kids to the routines of how to, you know, use the laptop cart. How do you take the computer out? How do you log in? And the teachers for that matter too. So, I mean, it just changes.
do you find that those, it sounds like that's kind of a hump that you have to get over at the beginning of the year where you're doing some of the more technical and more logistical kinds of things. Is that pretty typical for every start of the year you're going to do the same kinds of things?
Well, you know, some of those things are like importing the student names and things like that. Now, I hope to see the more that our schools use and become comfortable with technology that those intros, like intros to laptops and things like that, will not be so heavy as the years progress. Of course, then you always get a new model or, you know, a different kind. But
right.
I've seen that this year has been the first year that I've really seen that there has been a lot of transfer from the prior years and we're able to kind of click into that a little bit easier. So I hope to see that continue. This is, I should probably say, for Salem, this is the third year that they've had this position. So I've only been doing this for a little over 2 years, and they've only had somebody doing this for that long. So
you're probably finding your way a little bit, right?
Right. First year was a blur. Second year, we started getting into the groove. And this year is feeling a little bit more like we're transferring things from last year. So
do you feel like it's going a little bit more smoothly now?
I do. I feel like this year has really clicked a little bit better than the past year. The first year, really, because I also came into a new school system at the same time. I was learning how their server was set up, how their equipment worked, and just the logistics of that. So, and learning people's names and, you know, where everything is. So that first year was really just a total adjustment year. And then last year, we really did some great things and I see that progressing even further this year. So,
well, could you throw out a couple of examples, maybe one or two of the, you know, the big things that you did that you're excited about that maybe that really kind of demonstrate what you think it could be if done right all of the time?
Okay, let's see. I guess one of the most exciting projects I did, I actually did a few weeks ago. And it was really neat because there was just so much excitement generated, and the kids were learning on such a different level than you always see on an everyday kind of thing, I think just from the excitement level. Let me explain the project, and then maybe I can explain their reaction to it a little bit better. But we... I had a friend that went to the Galapagos Islands this past summer and took a lot of digital pictures and such, and then came back. She's a principal, so she doesn't have very much time in her schedule to, like, drop everything and come speak to a class. But we were able to pull in some resources from National Geographic that the kids were studying volcanoes. They were also talking about global warming, and they had a story that was about the Galapagos Islands too. So all of those things were in play, and so they were able to go through some of her digital pictures, see that, use some websites to get some background research on the Galapagos. These are third graders. And then write their own questions, you know, things that that weren't answered, because also I was conveying information from her. So a lot of times I didn't know all of the answers to their questions, but they were able to develop questions. And then that was the first time I used Skype. We Skyped with her in her office. So it only took her about 15 minutes out of her day, and the kids were able to see her on video and ask her the questions they developed, and she talked back to them. And then when they were done, the neatest part of the whole thing was they wrote their reactions. They went back and started doing writing, and just their writing was just wonderful and excited. They were jumping up and down. The teachers were excited because they were, and I mean, it was so many things in play. The teachers were excited because they were able to see the Skype as a tool that, well, gosh, we just connected, you know, not very far away, but hey, I know somebody in Singapore, I know somebody in Switzerland that we could get in to talk about this part of my curriculum or this part of my curriculum. So the teachers were excited about that aspect. The kids were excited about all of the different pictures and things that they had seen and learned, and then their writing was reflecting that. And it was just all in all a really neat experience to see. The technology was really cool and played an integral part in getting the kids excited and that motivation for learning and wanting to know more. But the learning that took place was really neat.
Well, what I liked, first of all, I loved how you sort of laid out the project with examples in your blog. So we'll make sure we link to that in the show notes, because it really enables you to see kind of what you were doing rather than just sort of hear about it, which is great. But what I really liked is I was kind of looking through that and checking out the YouTube videos and such, was that it really, although the technology was integral, it took a back seat, I think. It wasn't so much in your face. It was a means to connect with the principal in the Galapagos Islands. It was a means to share, you know, kind of what they took away from that, you know, Skype conference and so on, where it wasn't really, you know, you weren't teaching about the tools necessarily. It's really, I thought it was great.
No, and it wasn't. But then at the same time, there is no way that I could have done an in-service on that, on any one of those tools that we used, and generated that much excitement from the teachers. That was
absolutely
the thing that blew my mind. I had not anticipated that. So
that's huge, isn't it? I mean, the idea that the way that the training is currently done really doesn't foster the kind of excitement you want it to.
It's just an interesting process to step back and look at that and see, now how can I transfer that into any professional development I do it? And I don't know the answer to that right now.
I was going to ask you, do you have any approximation of what that might even begin to look like?
You know, I have found that is the answer, but I have found that, in my thinking on this, I have found that the best thing I can do to get teachers excited and interested in using tools is to actually get in the classroom and do it with them. And then if I can get in one teacher's classroom, and they see how it goes, they see how the kids react, then it just, the word kind of spreads. So, for me, that's been the most successful. Is it the most productive use of time, on my part? I don't know. I'm not sure. Because I'm not reaching 50 teachers at one time. I'm just reaching a small group. So it's a hard call. I don't know.
It sounds more like that's taking that kind of long view approach, that diffusion view, that hopefully it'll take time and settle out.
Right. Yeah, maybe so.
And I, you know, for what it's worth, it seems like it's a great worthwhile use of time if you're getting people excited about what you're doing. But it's got to be frustrating, too, to think that you are only hitting one person at a time with some of those things.
Yeah, but then at the same time, I mean, these are people that I've gotten to know, and to step back and watch their excitement and their growth with technology because of that, I do see that making an impact. It's just not within the time frame that sometimes you hope for, I guess.
What do you see as some of the biggest issues or biggest problems that teachers face when trying to integrate technology into their classrooms in a meaningful and kind of useful way?
I think and we've already mentioned it, the number one issue is time. They do not have the time to play and feel comfortable with what kind of technology they're bringing into the classroom. And it makes it's scary for them to bring in something that they're not totally comfortable with. So, and, you know, we talk about technology, and technology is the thing that I'm focusing on, but there's so many other components and so many other things that they're being asked to try new, too, new reading strategies, new math strategies, things like that, that there's just not enough time. So I think that's hard.
Yeah, I think that notion of kind of playing around, having that time to just explore, is really important, and it's tough to find. But I think that's where people get excited about things and really engage with them, is just the chance to explore and play with it.
Right.
But, you know, how do you provide those experiences is you know, a little bit more challenging maybe. But one thing I think is great that you, in your blog, you know, you point to new resources, interesting websites and things like that, which at least it provides sort of a one place for teachers to go to see what's new and kind of what you're interested in that they can explore with. So, you know, I think that's one way to do that. So if they have a few minutes, they can kind of pop over to your blog and check out what you're interested in. So.
Yeah, and you don't see, if you're following my blog, you don't necessarily see what I do internally, too, because I do send out a monthly email that has all of the posts that I've done in my blog, because if there's anything interesting on this email that you are interested in, then you can click and find something to do, and that's been a very successful technique, too.
Do you get responses to that?
Yes, I do, more so than, I'm not... The whole idea of RSS and you know, keeping up with feeds and things like that, that's just not really happening so much so on the teacher level right now. So the email, if I send out an email every time I find something new, then they, you know, then the emails, they're not all that interested in the emails. But if I just send out one with, you know, almost like a newsletter with links to interesting things, then I do find that they respond really well to that.
That's a really clever way to distribute it. I mean, I wouldn't have thought of that. I've got a friend who's keeping a blog about, you know, her life and her story, and she has a little box that people can fill in if they want to subscribe to the posts via email. But I think you're right, especially for teachers who are pretty busy with time anyways, to get something like that as a daily digest just doesn't work. But, you know, to get these monthly compilations let them scan through and kind of pick what's interesting to them. And I'm wondering, you know, as you find these tools, how do you stay on top of sort of the newest, coolest things that are out there? I think everybody's got different ways to do it, and I'm wondering what you do, Tina, to sort of to keep abreast of these things.
Well, I found that Twitter has been a really useful tool because whenever anything new comes out, usually there's people there talking about it with links to that. So that's been a quick way for me to keep up with new things. Of course, I subscribe to blogs and podcasts. A lot of times, I think what's happened over the past couple of years is that I've ended up subscribing to so many blogs that a lot of times I have a hard time weeding out what I'm reading. So right. That's become a little bit of a challenge lately. But I did, you know, I do at least keep tabs on titles and then go look further when I see something that's interesting. But
if you were to throw out maybe the top two or three tools or technologies or websites or resources that you're just really excited about, even if you're not using them yet in your work, what might they be?
Well, I see some different categories there. Me personally, one of the most useful tools for me has been Delicious, just because of the network part of that I can send. We can send links back and forth to each other on the instructional technology level. As far as classroom things, I love EdgeBlogs. I think that they're doing a great thing by providing teachers with free blogs. I have been really interested lately in VoiceThread. I've used it one time, but I think that's a really neat, easy tool to use with kids. So that's something I've been keeping an eye on. My teachers seem to buy in more than anything right now to podcasting, just because of the writing process that takes place behind the scenes on that. And that seems to have grabbed their attention more than anything else. But there's so many things out there.
Well, I thought VoiceThread was really cool, and I loved your the book talks that you linked to from your blog. That, you know, what a great way. We were just talking about blogs in my undergraduate course last week, and this would have been a great example. I'm going to make sure I send this out via email, because I'm sure it was a pretty relatively quick process, and I'm sure these discussions that they do are more rich maybe than they would have done only, you know, on a kind of a book report that would go only to the teacher.
Right, and that kind of stemmed from a collaborative effort at one of my schools between the Title I teacher, a reading recovery teacher, and the librarian. And then as I pulled it into the other school, I just started posting the students' book reports that they were doing with technology up to the blog, and then just I've watched that grow. So it's not really been the thing that it's just been kind of a background of what we're doing, not the actual project.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense. But, you know, I have a couple contacts that we're looking at maybe making that a bigger thing where we're sharing between schools, book talks and things like that. There are a lot of people talking about that right now, and I'll be interested to see where that goes, because that's a very common thing between schools, that anywhere you are, you can connect through books and reading, and that gets everybody excited, so...
Mark, I'm looking at the questions that we were kind of coming up with ahead of time, and one of these really stands out for me. You know, Tina, Mark, and now I am kind of wondering, if you were to look at a group of IT students like you were at one time, like Mark and I were at one time, who might be interested in K-12, you know, what kind of real-world advice would you give to them while they're in their programs? You know, especially if they're programs that aren't quite like yours sounds like it was, where there's an emphasis on the teaching part of it too, but more the tools.
Well,
or maybe a better way to phrase the question is just, what do you think, you know, as an IT student comes into that K-12 arena and prepares to do work with teachers and support them, what do you think the biggest shocks are going to be to them as they come into that real world?
There are so many exciting new technologies out there. And then when you try to bring that into a classroom situation, it's not always as easy. And I've been in the teacher's position, so I understand how hard it is to develop and try new things. But with technology and with the way it's changing so fast that we're not just talking about a slightly new thing. We're talking about almost new concepts of how technology can impact education. I mean, when you bring into the Web 2.0, I mean, that's just such a huge broad, the connection part of it, that concept, that's a hard concept right now to get across in education. It's easier when you come into a classroom to be able to provide projects that are still software-based, or, you know, you've mentioned PowerPoint before, but, you know, a kid version of PowerPoint or Kidspiration, Inspiration, things like that, then the whole collaboration concept just brings such a different level to that, that as excited as, you know, we might be about those connections and connections we're making, it's really scary when you're in the classroom to be considering that. And when you are dealing with all of the other parts of your classroom, you might not always have time to really think and understand all of what that means. If that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah.
As you look ahead to the next 5 years, I think, you know, I guess my personal take is that kind of thing isn't going to change for a long time. I mean, those issues are always going to be present and with us. But I'm wondering, Tina, if as you're looking ahead to things that are coming down the pipe and you know, the tools and techniques that might come in the next 5 years, is there anything that you see that might change that to some degree or make life easier for instructional technology resource teachers or for teachers in the classroom who are thinking about doing technology work? I mean, you mentioned Web 2.0 and the emphasis it has on collaboration, and I'm wondering if you see anything else like that that's coming our way.
You know, as you're asking me these questions, I keep looking back over to your TPCK model that you talked about on your last podcast, and I think That was a very interesting conversation for me to hear and to really think about, because I think right now one of the things as instructional technologists we need to be looking at is the pedagogy part of that whole level, because it's a teamwork collaboration as far as with the teacher and the instructional technology person, the teacher bringing in the content, the instructional technology person bringing in the technology part. But, you know, the pedagogy of that too, how mine matches with the teacher that I'm collaborating with. I think that's one of the areas that we really need to be focusing on, and I'm not even sure if this is answering your question, but I almost think that the Web 2.0 and the things like that fall within that as well, because we're talking about different ways of teaching using technology when we start bringing in the collaboration part of it. So that's one of the areas that I think we really need to be thinking and looking at.
That's really interesting, too, and I think that's a really insightful point, is the idea that when teachers are collaborating with ITRTs or tech coordinators or whatever, is the idea of where the most important part of the collaboration is probably in the pedagogy arena, because you're right, you have more knowledge and more experience with a lot of the tools and resources available. The teacher is intimately familiar with the content, where you know, might not be as close to it. But the pedagogy is where, you know, I think there's always been, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, but the idea that there's been sort of this unstated assumption that constructivist uses of technology are the only ones to push in the classroom, and it's a way to sort of revolutionize, you know, teaching in the classroom. But really, if the teacher maybe isn't coming from that perspective, there may be ways to sort of negotiate that, to think about how these tools might fit in and maybe inch things forward or whatever. But that idea of collaborating on how you'd actually use it in the classroom is where probably the closest collaboration comes into play.
Right. And I think that's the big word, the negotiate part, because that's what you do within that, in that it's a negotiation between the teacher and the instructional technologist. So that was very interesting, that model that you brought up. And, I've enjoyed thinking about that.
We certainly can't take the credit for the model, I think, but I mean, in the conversation that we had on that show, it changed the way I'm kind of looking at things, you know. So, I mean, like you're saying, as using that as a model to approach what's happening in the classroom, I think is maybe the TPCK's model. You know, it's best use of it. And I guess, Tina, the last question that I might ask ask you to think about is, as you're looking at that model and seeing the intersections of the content knowledge, the pedagogical knowledge, and the technological knowledge, I mean, the ideal, I guess, is that we'll land somewhere in the middle. And this is a question we kind of kicked over on that show a little bit. But where do you think most teachers fall on day-to-day in that model? Do you think they're – how aware do you think they are of the T? And where do you think they fall in the intersection of all of those things?
You know, when I look at the model, I think about how that you almost have to have a solid understanding of the content, and then separately from that, a solid understanding of the technology before then you're able to have those overlap. So I know that they have a great understanding of the content, and the pedagogy is negotiable, right? You know, how they teach, they have a good understanding of that. So that overlap is great. But as far as going down into the technology, you know, some of them, so we have some teachers that feel really comfortable with the technology, so they're moving over into how that overlaps in the content. But I think a lot of times they want to overlap it right away without completely understanding the technology part. It's just such an intricate process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then there's some people that don't feel comfortable at all with the technology. So do you start with just the technology and then start with the overlap, or do you start with the overlap with the content and then work that in? It's something I need to keep thinking about.
And the trick is, realistically, it's probably different for every teacher.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, definitely.
You know, and that sort of complicates things further. But at the same time, hopefully it's useful to kind of think about alternative ways to start that process, to start the negotiation or whatever, rather than just immediately go on with one, you know, one element or the other.
I think also you discussed at one point in your podcast too about the big cloud of other things that impact
right.
the framework that's happening within. And I think mm-hmm. that is making a huge impact that in the real classroom that a lot of times doesn't get brought into a conversation like this.
Right.
So.
Well, Tina, thank you so much for joining us today. I mean, the conversations like this are what make this podcast exciting for me, because Mark and Michael and I could sit around all day and just shoot the breeze. But when we talk to people who are doing the work in the classroom, I mean, I think that really points out to us what we need to be aware of as we're talking about these things as instructional technologists. So I wanted to just commend you on the work that you're doing. I think your blog is fantastic, and it sounds like the work you're doing in the classroom is really the model of what we've been talking about.
Great. Well, thanks. I enjoy these conversations too, because a lot of times in this position, the only place that you can have conversations like this is with other people in other realms. So I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, hopefully we'll try to check back in with you later in the year, maybe sometime in the spring, and kind of find out what, if you'd be interested, what kind of, you know, new things you've been working on, any new interests, any new realizations. Because as Steve said, I think, you know, contributions from folks like you are really what makes this podcast, I think, not only for Steve and Michael and I, but also for the folks listening, make it really interesting and engaging.
Well, I've enjoyed it thoroughly.
All right. Well, this
thank
has been,
you for having me.
Thank you, Tina. And Mark, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
See if we can. No, thank you. We'll see if we can dig up our friend. I don't know where he is. Maybe he's awake now at some point. This has been Gentech Show number 29. Thanks for listening.